This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling. Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're here. It's been a busy week already. We're only halfway through. Britt Hume is standing by. Dennis Ross, he's a premier Middle Eastern expert, written books about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. He is now the William Davidson Distinguished Fellow at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy and author of Statecraft 2.0, What America Needs to Lead in a Multipolar World. And we're going to get to all that. I do have to say that I did think that Witkoff and Kushner were already in Egypt. Evidently, they just arrived yesterday. I thought they were there on Sunday. So we're going to see if we can land this plane. The president basically told them, do not come back unless we have a deal with Hamas and Israel. So we'll get into detail on that. Also, a quick announcement, Patriot Awards coming up on November 6th. It'll be at 8 o'clock at the Tillis Center in Long Island University. Sean Hannity host. Go to foxnation.com/Patriot Awards for tickets. Now let's get to the big three.
Number three.
People don't know the rationale behind the deployment of National Guard troops in my state.
I wish you loved Chicago as much as you hate President Trump. And currently, the National Guard are on the way to Chicago.
The Bondi brawl, the Trump team decision to take the combative style to these hearings has changed the dynamics in Washington from RFK to Kash Patel and now Pam Bondi. We see in the second term a group who will take the fight to the accusers as it's going on. Let's see how it works.
Number two.
An interesting poll that came out in the middle of the shutdown found that only 28% of Americans say that they are very concerned about being personally impacted by the shutdown. But 60% of Americans are very concerned that 4 million people are going to lose their health insurance if these tax credits expire. And so the pain point between the shutdown and what the shutdown is actually over is totally out of whack and against the Republicans in that.
So the shutdown continues as air travel and back pay become central issues. I think it's time for the GOP to work vulnerable Dems and convert five more to their side to reopen this government.
Number one.
This president is determined to federalize the National Guard and to occupy our cities with the military. It's unconscionable. It's unthinkable. But this is America today.
This is Mayor Johnson, way over his head from the day he got the job. ICE bulking up, not backing down, as the Dems once again find themselves defending chaos and crime. I hope America sees this as clear as I do. Just time to bring some semblance of order to cities like Washington, D.C., and like Memphis. And you see what's happening when politics gets in the way in Portland and in Chicago. I want to find out what Britt Hume thinks about all this. He's Fox News' senior political analyst. Britt, in a way, we're seeing some unprecedented things. You see a governor and mayor unwilling to allow the federal government to crack down on crime and illegal immigrants. How does this end?
You know, Brian, we haven't seen anything like this really since the 1960s when there was resistance in the South to the desegregation of schools. You remember the famous scene of George Wallace, then the Democratic governor of Alabama, standing in the schoolhouse door, so to speak, to prevent black students from going to school at the University of Alabama. And federal troops were then mobilized, and he backed down. But that's the kind of resistance we're seeing now in some of these cities. And all kinds of wild conspiracy theories are being spun about what the president is planning to do. You played some of it just a minute ago. They're going to, you know, bring in the troops. They're going to. It's been argued that he's going to cancel the 2028 presidential election and all the rest of it. And this is sort of where we are. The president does have the legal right to use federal forces, federal troops, to protect federal facilities. They can't arrest anybody, really. Their powers are limited, but they have a right, a legal right to do it. But Democrats have seized on this and are trying to resist. Mm-hmm. Just think what would happen if they cooperated.
I know. I mean, Memphis is an example. You got a Democratic mayor, and you also D.C., you have a Democratic mayor who said, well, you know what, I could kind of use the help here. It helps in Tennessee that you have a Republican governor, right?
It makes all the difference. If the Democratic governors and mayors in these cities decided to cooperate, but the problem for them is very simple, Brian. There is one imperative in the Democratic Party these days, and that is resist Trump, fight Trump, oppose Trump in every way you can. And their constituents seem to want to see them fighting. And it doesn't really seem to matter to them that a lot of the fighting is flailing, but nonetheless, that's what they want them to do, and that's what they're doing, and that's where a lot of these hysterical conspiracy theories spun by people like the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, and others, Chris Murphy of Connecticut, the senator from Connecticut, that's what why they're spinning this stuff.
And you know what both have in common? They both see themselves as presidential candidates, as is Governor J.B. Pritzker. But you know what they're seeing? Again, a couple of things. The first chapter of this story was written during the Biden years when he let 8 to 10 million people in illegally. And we said, what's going on here? And they said there's no problem. And then we look at O'Hare Airport, and they were using it as living quarters. And we're seeing what happened at the Roosevelt Hotel and 36 hotels in New York City, overflow of illegal immigrants. Well, Trump comes in and says, I'm going to get them out. Well, now all the resistance is getting them out. 2 million self-deported, 600,000 have been deported, and there's millions are still left. And he's going for the worst of the worst in the perfect world. But now there's resistance to having them out. And I'm just wondering, so in other words, it's okay to come in illegally, but when we ask you to leave and you don't, and we force you out, many of which have criminal records, now Democrats say, that's my hill to die on. I'm going to bat for illegal immigrants who can't vote and many which have committed crimes. It's an odd place to take your stand.
Well, it is, except for this, Brian. There's a Harvard-Harris poll out that asks a bunch of questions, one of them being, you know, do you support the deportation of people here illegally? And it's broadly supported, with a huge majority of Republicans supported, a smaller majority of independents supported, but only 36% of Democratic voters support the deportation of illegals. The number gets much higher if you phrase the question as the deportation of people here illegally who've committed crimes. But on the simple question of simply deporting people for being here illegally, it's only 36% support, which gives you an idea of what these politicians, these Democratic politicians in these states are looking at.
And it goes back to my original point. As we all know, these guys are running for president, and those are the people they're looking to impress. But the use of race is so wanton and so, I think, has no place in this conversation. But listen to Governor Pritzker go after this. Cut three.
They're raiding neighborhoods where instead of going after the bad guys, they're just picking up people who are brown and black and then checking their credentials. Are you a U.S. citizen? I don't know about you, but I don't carry around papers that say I'm a U.S. citizen.
You have a license, though, don't you? Number two is black and brown. What are you talking about? So you're accusing ICE officials. He called them thugs, by the way, ICE officials. And I guess Border Patrol, ATF, the FBI, who's ever working these cities of being racist. Hey, you're Hispanic. You must be illegal. I mean, what an accusation.
Well, and I don't think it's very well based. But look, he's pushing the buttons that you try to push if you're a Democratic politician in the age of Trump. And, of course, there's a very broad consensus, and there has been for a long time, against discrimination against people based on their skin color. And so that is something that Democrats have championed, and it's something their constituents respond to, most of the country responds to. So if you can make that charge stick, it would be effective. I just don't know that they can make it stick.
It's getting worse. And this mayor, you know, who has 19% approval rating, Brandon Johnson, this is what he says is happening. Cut five.
I said very candidly that the right wing in this country wants a rematch of the Civil War. I want that to sit in right now, because the President of the United States of America has declared war on the people of Chicago and people across America.
I mean, have you ever heard anything like that, Britt?
It's utter claptrap. And, you know, this is a mayor in sort of desperate political situation here, where he's so unpopular and claiming that, you know, they want to refight the Civil War. It's nonsense, but you can see what he's doing. He's reaching out to the minority constituencies and constituency in his city to try to regain some footing. I don't think it's going to work, but there you are.
But I would say a couple of things that are happening. I think people are a little tired of people just grabbing race and just running with it to the point where we're getting almost numb to it, especially when it doesn't exist. And number two is, as you look at the battle between the Civil War, does he remember what side was what? I mean, the Republicans want to refight the Civil War. Yeah, with Abraham Lincoln as our leader. I mean, he doesn't even understand history to understand what's going on. Also, they're working to get crime. They're working to stop crime. Does anybody think crime is not a problem in Chicago? So they're going to make that hill to stand on? Don't you remember the city council meetings when we saw African-American families standing up complaining about the social services that are going to illegals and not to them? Have they overrun our cities and littered their streets and making it unsafe for their kids to go to school? I mean, those people are also listening to this.
Yeah, Brian, they are. And I think, you know, this issue, immigration, and particularly illegal immigration, a big piece of why Trump was elected. It's something he's made a priority. Resistance to illegal immigration, stopping it from coming in, getting people out, it's all broadly popular. So it works for Trump politically. But in these particular areas, urban areas in particular, where Democrats dominate, where the voters are tend to vote Democratic or liberal, it's a different world. And so they're responding, each of them, to the constituencies that they face. Mm-hmm. Trump, of course, is to a broader constituency of the whole country. And so that helps to explain the difference. But I just don't think, broadly speaking, Brian, that Democrats can ultimately win on this issue if they are seen by the public as being in support of illegal immigrants mm-hmm. and illegal immigration.
And the Republicans got to do a better job of telling us who you're picking up. Are they criminals? Are they pedophiles? Let's see their picture. Let's sign exactly what you're doing. So don't make it fill the message gap. Lastly, on this shutdown, we always cover these stories, but now we're on day six or seven, and I'm not sure how this ends. But I know the one thing that they have is this air traffic control situation. We have a shortage. Yesterday it was 327 delays, 21 cancellations. That number likely to get worse as paychecks are missed. Your thoughts about how this ends, since you've seen so many?
Well, it will last until the results of it, the consequences of it, become dire. And what you're seeing now with these air traffic situation and flight delays, people feel that. They feel that across the country. Nobody likes it. It's a sign of failure, and that'll be the impetus for a deal, which could come sooner rather than later, in my opinion. But that's what will drive it. What's being argued over here is what amounts to subsidies that were imposed as kind of an emergency measure during COVID to help people pay for their health insurance. It was never instituted to be permanent, and it had an expiration date. That expiration date is coming. That was how the law was supposed to work. The Democrats want to extend these subsidies at a time when we're, $37 trillion in debt. Republicans are resisting that and want the law to go ahead and take effect. But I think Republicans are probably going to cave on this eventually, not to not necessarily to get the government open, but afterward, because you got an election coming up, midterm elections, very tough situation for the Republicans, especially in the House, and people losing subsidies that they'd come to count on for their health insurance is an issue that could hurt the Republicans.
Absolutely. It's very interesting times. Britt Hume, thanks so much. Always appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian. Good to talk to you as always.
Yeah, Britt Hume always makes us smarter. 1-866-408-7669. We're going to take some calls next. Also, I'm getting a lot of emails over the last 24 hours, so I'm going to get to some of them. And then right after that, we're going to bring you up to date on what's happening in Cairo as we see Hamas, the U.S., Turkey, Egyptian officials, Qatari officials, all with one objective: to bring an end to the fighting in Gaza. How that's done will decide if it's going to kick up again. Don't move.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Every day, America's first responders stand ready. Firefighters, law enforcement, paramedics, doctors, dispatchers, and people who put themselves on the line for public safety. But keeping them connected in moments of crisis has not been easy. That's why Congress authorized a nationwide network for public safety. Today, that promise is fulfilled through FirstNet. It's the only nationwide network built with and for first responders. So whether it's a big city, rural town, or remote tribal community, FirstNet helps ensure no call for help goes unanswered. It gives first responders priority access, never throttles their communications in the U.S., helping them to connect across agencies when it matters most. This isn't just a network. It's a lifeline, a bipartisan commitment to America's public safety, built to serve those who serve us all. FirstNet is the backbone of our nation's emergency response and will continue to be in the future. FirstNet, built with AT&T. Learn more on firstnet.com/public safety first.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Why do you want to keep this secret? The American people don't know the rationale behind the deployment of National Guard troops in my state.
You voted to shut down the government, and you're sitting here. Our law enforcement officers aren't being paid. They're out there working to protect you. I wish you loved Chicago as much as you hate President Trump. And currently, the National Guard are on the way to Chicago. If you're not going to protect your citizens, President Trump will.
And that's what Pam Bondi did yesterday. She made it clear. Listen, I know your back. You could ask her whatever question you want. I know your background. And it's the combative style. I don't think irrational yelling style, but I think that there's certain things she's not going to comment on. Oh, what's that private conversation like with the President of the United States? I'm not going to comment. What about this investigation? Not while it's ongoing. But when it comes to what's going on in Chicago, they want to talk about the Epstein files. Well, when it comes to Senator Dick Durbin, he's got a huge problem with the Epstein files. Evidently, he was holding it up when Joe Biden was president, and now he's all curious about it, just like Tom Massey, the Republican in the House. Now he got to get to the bottom of the Epstein files because of his rivalry with Trump. I like this style. You know, I like answer questions when you can, but point out the point of view that you're getting. And that's what Pam Bondi was doing. I think it's the Trump style. What do you think about that? Patel had it. RFK took it after he got his confirmation. Listen to this as the senator from California, Padilla, was taking on Bondi. Listen to this about Kristi Noem and her objections. Cut 22.
Attorney General Bondi, you are the Attorney General of the United States. Director Patel reports to you. Do you believe he's doing a good job, yes or no?
I believe Director Patel is doing a great job. You know where he is right now, Senator Padilla?
Right now,
you asked me a question.
Yes,
Director
I know
Patel
where he
right
is,
now
and I know
is
where
in Chicago,
you
Senator
said it earlier
Durbin,
in the hearing.
Fighting to keep
You said
Chicago
it earlier
safe.
In the hearing, and yes, I have been paying attention.
You know, you want order in Chairman, here now, yet you stormed the Director of Homeland Security, Kristi Noem. You sure didn't have order that day, did you, Senator?
Attorney General, you are under oath. I did not storm the secretary, the video.
Oh, that was on video. That video has been released, I believe.
I love it. Senator Padilla did cause that. He flew out there, missed a vote in order to cause an uproar, act as if he was sticking up for his citizens when it's all they were doing is trying to round up illegal immigrant criminals. That seems to be a problem because Donald Trump is a part of it. And if Joe Biden cared at all about illegal immigration, cared about our borders, we wouldn't even have this problem right now. And by the way, the numbers are stunning about how the president has cracked down on the border. I mean, I never thought it was possible in my lifetime, but they just released more. I know we're getting used to this now, but we really shouldn't. But when you look at what's happening at the border and the numbers, it is beyond belief. So get this. The Southwest border apprehensions here in 2025, 237,565. At 1.86 million average apprehensions for the last four fiscal years. So it's down now 87%. So is that stunning to you? I mean, if you wanted to just be somewhat fair, even if you're a Democrat, and say, man, what Senator Fetterman has said, can't believe how this border's been shut down. If we had done this, we probably would have won the election. We just got half of that. We're denied it was even happening. So far, this is the lowest number of apprehensions at the Southwest border since 201,780. Why? Because the message is out. If you try to get in, you're not going to. It's not worth selling your lean-to in order to get here.
It's Will Tame Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern Monday through Thursday at foxnews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We are very close to making a deal on the Middle East that will bring peace to the Middle East. After all of these years of millions and millions, tens of millions of people being killed, there's a chance to bring peace to the Middle East. In addition to that, I made seven other deals, and they're, you know, great. And we're, you know, things are happening with respect to Russia, Ukraine. That's one that last week, Mark, 7,812 people were killed. Soldiers, mostly soldiers. Yep. But 7,000, more than 7,000, almost 8,000 soldiers were killed. It's a crazy thing.
Yeah, I think blame it all on Russia. Don't let anyone kid you. Don't tell you. Don't listen to Angela Merkel, who's on her book tour now, saying that it really is Eastern Europe's fault for not meeting with Russia. I'm not kidding. That's in her new book, and what she's saying just to try to save her legacy, which she's the most overrated politician in my lifetime. Joining us now, Ambassador Dennis Ross. You know, he's the author of Statecraft 2.0, What America Needs in a Multipolar World. And he's one of the most, probably the most interesting, the in-depth, the most knowledgeable person on the Middle East and his affairs you'll ever talk to. So, Ambassador, are you optimistic that the talks in Cairo are going to yield a positive result?
I'm hopeful. One of the reasons I draw a distinction between hope and optimism sort of is driven by a sense that things always have a way of working out. Being hopeful, you focus on the possibilities. Right now, there's a genuine possibility. I think what we're going to see in Egypt is a good chance to at least get the first phase of this implemented, meaning the first phase, meaning the release of hostages, meaning all the hostages, and the release of Palestinian prisoners. The Israelis withdrawing to a certain agreed point within Gaza. Getting that done would be huge. Now, will we get all 20 points of the president's plan done? That, I think, is going to be much more difficult. It's going to require really hard negotiations, very intense follow-through. But the importance of getting the first part done is it builds the momentum and makes it harder and harder to resist doing the whole thing. And if we see the whole thing, it is absolutely transformative.
So a couple of things. Al Norov, he's the representative from Hamas, says he's optimistic. I also say that they've exchanged lists. Tell me how significant this is to you on the hostages, their locations. And they've exchanged the list of the Israelis, say these are the list of the prisoners you're going to get out. So don't, to me, yeah. That I feel like they're working on the logistics for that to happen because they're exchanging with each other, too.
Look, this is the key to the previous agreements was working out the numbers of hostages to be released. Hamas was very slow in terms of identifying who they were. They were agreeing just to the numbers. So this is different in terms of identifying, in a sense it's supposed to be all of them, but it's basically already identifying people. On the Israeli side, there are 250 prisoners, Palestinian prisoners with a lot of blood on their hands, who the Israelis have agreed to give up. That's out of a total number of about 285 that they have. Among those that the Hamas are seeking include what I would call those who are really symbolic politically. One is Marwan Barghouti. Another is a man named Ahmad Sadat. Sadat killed a former Israeli minister, assassinated him. Marwan Barghouti is known because many people among Palestinians see him as a possible future leader. Many sort of equate him to those sort of liberation movement leaders who were in prison and then became leaders on the outside. I think, ironically, the last person that Abu Mazen would like to see released would be Marwan Barghouti, because he creates an alternative. But also for Benjamin Netanyahu, releasing him would be a really symbolic, that he can say he opposes the Palestinian state, but now you'd be releasing someone who is identified as the most likely Palestinian leader who could emerge, who might end up leading such a state. So his symbolism is a problem for both Abu Mazen and, I think, for Netanyahu. I think the Israelis will resist that, but Hamas has put in six people they know would be really hard for the Israelis to release. Over and above those, some of whom are, you know, major bomb makers who will be among the 250 who will be released.
You also have some people on that list. You also have some people on that list who were part of the October 7th attack.
Absolutely. 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 But you put your finger on it, Brian. They're operating at a level of detail that shows there's a level of seriousness about getting it done. And for me, that's really an important sign.
Al-Sisi has also, the president of Egypt, invited President Trump to join them for a ceasefire ceremony. And I'm thinking to myself, you don't really say that publicly unless you feel like you're almost there. We know that Kushner and Witkoff have arrived. I thought they were actually there already, but they just arrived today. And, you know, the president did have a hard and fast deadline for Sunday, but he's extended it because he feels like they're making so much progress for the most part. So this is another thing, and this is something it probably sounds like it's workable, but it says he wants the Israelis not on a yellow line where they were. They want them thoroughly out of Gaza, and they want all the aid unencumbered in, and they're reluctant to give up their guns. They said they need them for defense. I'm talking about Hamas. So these are the type of things they're working at.
Well, those are the issue of I guess there's 2 points I would make, maybe 3 points I'd make. The first is the Sisi invitation. I think it's not just a sign that things are moving in the right direction. I'm not a presidential advisor, but I would really advise him to do it, because if he goes, it creates, again, an environment of such momentum and built-in pressure. One thing that has been underestimated by too many observers, Hamas succeeded in shifting all the onus onto Israel, which is outrageous at one level, but they succeeded in it. What the Trump plan did by getting the Arabs on board, the Europeans on board, the Israelis accepted it, it shifted the onus. People tend to underestimate how important it is to Hamas not to be isolated. And the context now, especially if the president goes to such a conference, again, the weight on Hamas becomes, I think, overwhelming. And so it just increases the chance not only that you'll get phase one done. And I call what we're talking about, all the hostages released in exchange for the Palestinian prisoners being released, and Israel withdraws to the line within Gaza, I call that as phase one. Phase two are all the issues related to ending the war, Israeli withdrawal, disarmament of Hamas. These are the keys, along with the creation of an interim administration and an international stabilization force. These are the keys to transforming Gaza over time. There will be no reconstruction in Gaza if there isn't demilitarization. And Brian, that is not an argument. It's a fact. The Saudis and the Emiratis are not going to invest in Gaza if Hamas has arms or can reconstitute itself. And once you have an international stabilization force in there and the public in Gaza can be protected from Hamas, you'll see the public turn in a very clear way against Hamas.
I would hope so. They're trying to recognize different clans within Gaza are the Israelis, almost like we did in looking for tribes that were workable or anti-Al-Qaeda that were going to allow a government in Iraq. I thought that this seemed to be trying to do the same thing. I want you to hear what Dave Ignatius said. Obviously, the Washington Post columnist, he knows a lot in this area. You know, obviously, any of those establishment writers have a hard time saying much about Trump, but I think he's been very fair. Listen to this. Let's go to the second one.
This peace plan came together really because Kushner, with Trump's backing, took all the elements that Arab countries, Israel, all the players had been working on, sometimes for more than a year, and pushed them together and demanded that they be acted on. You know, suddenly this became a 20-point peace plan, Donald Trump's peace plan, but it was something that was pulled together, really, as you say, over a weekend. The question now, I think, is, you know, in this conflict, you can get people right to the edge of peace. I've seen that over and over again.
Right.
But getting them in that last distance, you know, getting Hamas to actually accept that it will be disarmed in Gaza, that it's, as I said earlier, that its moment is ended. There's a lot still to be done. It's easier to say that than make it happen.
So, yeah, your thoughts about with the 20-point plan, a lot of those points came from the Arab League, you know, those Arab Turkey, Qatar, UAE, Saudi Arabia. This has been bantered about, and that's why they seem to be – that's what gives me optimism, because they're putting the pressure on. It's not Trump and Israel putting the pressure on. Trump is Trump comes up with a plan, but he knows it's got to be Arab pressure that does it.
Look, I'll make a couple of points. First, the only name I would add to what David Ignatius was saying was Tony Blair. He was working on this for more than the past year, and I'm quite familiar with the efforts he was making over that time. He and Jared Kushner then began to work very closely, and that provided a spur, but you put your finger on it. What is different about this than anything else? One thing, and I think you've heard me say this, the Arabs have never assumed responsibility for trying to settle this conflict, ever. They've never assumed responsibility for the Palestinians. They use this conflict as a slogan. They, you know, they were always afraid. I'll say when we were at Camp David in the year 2000 and we wanted the Arab leaders to put pressure on Arafat, they all feared Arafat would stand up and say, "They're trying to get me to betray the Palestinian national cause." And there was no Arab leader then that was prepared to stand up to that. Now, today, there is no single Palestinian leader who has that credibility, is iconic. And you look at the Saudis and the Emiratis in particular, not only them, but look at them in particular. They know they can't ignore this problem, and they know this problem is one that will disrupt their own agenda. They want to transform themselves, the region. They want to be leaders in AI. They want to be leaders in alternative energy. They want to be leaders not just in the region, but internationally. And they can't be that if this conflict persists because it's such a distraction. Having the Arabs assume responsibility is the single greatest change that we're seeing right now.
I hear you. Couple of things. This guy Borgatti, I've been reading a lot about him, but have you met him?
Yeah.
Have you met
him?
No.
Okay. I met one of his sons. I know him well.
But is it like letting
Sinwar
out?
I know him by reputation well.
Is this like letting Sinwar out? You know, he goes in there, the Israelis famously save his life because he has some type of disease or has a pen, whatever happened, you know, so he's in there for 20 years, comes out and authors October 7th. I mean, could that be the risk here? Or is he somebody that, I mean, I hope this doesn't sound naive. Is he somewhat of a reformer?
I'll put it this way. I want to describe him because while I don't know him personally, I know a lot about him. I know many of the people who are close to him, and I've dealt with many of the people who are close to him. He is not Sinwar, because Sinwar was an ideologue. For Sinwar, being a martyr was more important than anything else. For Sinwar, it wasn't about building a Palestinian future. It was about destroying Israel. Barghouti isn't driven by that kind of an ideology. He was also never corrupt. What separated him from many other in Fatah was he was never corrupt. Now, did he play a role in the Second Intifada? Was he responsible for the killing of a number of Israelis? The answer is yes. Within the jail, he has been someone who tries to be a bridge builder between the multiple different Palestinian factions. He has credibility among the Palestinian public, but he has that credibility largely because he's in jail. Is he a Mandela? I don't see him as a Mandela, but I think Palestinians see him as a potential Mandela. If the Israelis, I think, had been thinking strategically, they would have had their intelligence people create a kind of quiet dialogue with him while he was in jail. That's what was done with Mandela, and you could test and see what he was prepared to live up to, what he might be prepared to do. That's really not been the case with Barghouti, but okay. he is clearly a symbol, and he is clearly someone who at least historically was never corrupt.
Lastly, just last minute, you have Donald Trump, who is the best friend to Israel. He's the most popular politician in Israel. Yet everybody in the Arab world feels as though most people, they can count on him. In fact, one of the headlines is Hamas wants guarantees from Trump. How has he managed to not be the enemy of the Arab world and be the best friend to the Israelis? Or do you have something wrong? Do you challenge the premise of the question?
I'm not sure I challenge the premise of the question. I think we're in kind of a unique moment where everybody in the region has an interest in seeing this end. We've never quite had that before. Now, you have Donald Trump there who's made it clear he wants it to end. And you have Donald Trump there who's also demonstrated in the Arab eyes that, you know, while he has been strongly supportive of Israel, which they didn't always like, they also saw that he could say things and Netanyahu could not say no. It's that combination where he wants it, they want it, they see he has leverage on Israel, and particularly Netanyahu. And I'll tell you, go back to Anwar Sadat. When Anwar Sadat made peace, what was his explanation? He said the U.S. has 99% of the cards. I need them to affect the Israelis. Right now, what they see is that Donald Trump can affect the Israelis, and they have an interest in seeing this end. And that's why the most important point I'm making to you today, Brian, is the Arabs being prepared to assume responsibility they never have in the history of this conflict. That's what makes this moment different.
And let's hope I talk to you about the aftermath of a signed deal soon. Ambassador Dennis Ross, thanks so much for the perspective. It's great. Appreciate it.
Always great to be with you. Thanks, Brian.
All right, we're going to wrap up this hour in just a moment. Don't move.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Stephen Miller is a clown. I've never seen that guy in real life, but he looks like he's like 4'10". And he looks like he is angry about the fact that he's 4'10". Like, laugh at them. Laugh at them. This is about insecure masculinity. And one of the best ways that you can dismantle a movement of insecure men is by making fun of them.
We knew that her brain didn't work. Now we know their eyes don't work. So, she is a mess, right? What a train wreck. What a train wreck. Every time she's on TV, Republican approval ratings go up, Democrat approval ratings go down. That lady is a walking nightmare. A
couple of things. Stephen Miller's 5'9", 5'10". So I don't even know what kind of shot is that. And what is every word like? What are you, 11? Are you in junior high school? Like, just enunciate. And I know on social media you can be different, you can be in a hallway, but she's sitting there with a hoodie on, sitting Indian style, just ranting about the height of the president's premier advisor. Do you think you have time to sneak in where you disagree? Can you just say, here's what my problem with Steve Miller is, what he's saying of substance. But the only thing is he's overcompensating for following through on policies that Donald Trump wrote out. I don't get it. Hey, don't forget, I'm going to be History, Liberty, and Laughs. I'm going to be in Pottstown, Pennsylvania. We've already hit a record for VIP tickets. But go to BrianKilmeade.com for tickets, and let's sell this thing out. And that's streamed on Fox Nation November 1st.
From high atop News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's going to be a busy hour coming to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, where unbelievably and embarrassingly, there was a big protest, not for Israel, not against Israel, instead of support of those who lost their lives October 7th because of how Israel waged the war or that they exist at all. That's really the sentiment in so many of these cities, and I can't figure it out. Never going to subscribe to it. Meanwhile, we're waiting on a bunch of things. We still have a situation where both Republicans and Democrats are getting their messaging out on the lockout. We also have James Comey reporting to court to turn himself in. As you know, he's been indicted by a grand jury for his actions during the first Trump administration. So we'll keep you up to date on that. I'm not sure there's going to be any perp work or something to see for anyone, but we'll let you know. So let's get to, before we get to our first guest, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
People don't know the rationale behind the deployment of National Guard troops in my state.
I wish you loved Chicago as much as you hate President Trump. And currently, the National Guard are on the way to Chicago.
And that is, of course, the voice of Pam Bondi. The Bondi brawl, I call it. The Trump team decision to take his combative style to these hearings has changed the dynamics in Washington. From RFK to Kash Patel and now Pam Bondi, we see this second term, a group who will take the fight to the accusers, and it's working.
Number two.
An interesting poll that came out in the middle of the shutdown found that only 28% of Americans say that they are very concerned about being personally impacted by the shutdown. But 60% of Americans are very concerned that 4 million people are going to lose their health insurance if these tax credits expire.
That's a Democratic consultant, Molly Murphy. Shutdown continues as air travel back home and back pay become central issues. I think it's time for the GOP to work the vulnerable Democrats and try to convert five to get this government back up and running.
Number one.
This president is determined to federalize the National Guard and to occupy our cities with the military. It's unconscionable. It's unthinkable. But this is America today. And
yeah, that is Mayor Brandon Johnson. What an embarrassment. ICE bulking up and not backing down as the Dems once again find themselves defending chaos and crime. I hope America sees this as clear as I do. Let's bring in Rich Lowry now with the National Review. Speaker Johnson's now speaking, calling out individual senators for not voting to get the government back up and running, for maybe a verbal pledge to revisit some of the subsidies that were put in place during the pandemic. Rich, your stance on how who's winning the PR war in the lockout?
Well, I thought Democrats were fated to lose, as we might have talked about a week or two ago. Usually when you're forcing the shutdown, you're opposing a so-called clean CR, you're the one who's going to get the blame and have to buckle at the end of the day. That's the way it's always worked. But I just wonder whether this health subsidy issue, they're getting some traction on it. I think it's basically pretextual. They just want to shut down because they hate Trump. But I think the Republican position that, oh, we'll talk to you about it after the shutdown, I'm not sure whether that's going to be sustainable. I think Republicans might just begin to think, well, if we're going to cave on that issue after the shutdown, why don't we cave on it or make some assurance that we'll cave on it during the shutdown? So I'm kind of shocked at how well Democrats are doing, I hate to say.
Right. Have you seen polls reflecting that?
Yeah, the polling just hasn't blamed them the way I would have thought that they would. I mean, they've precipitated this. This is their thing. Republicans have the commonsensical position, let's just have clean CR, keep spending levels the same, and then figure out, you know, specific appropriation bills, you know, weeks from now or whatever. Usually that's the position that prevails, but it's not clearly prevailing this time around. I hope I'm wrong, but that's the way I read it.
Here's President Trump yesterday, cut 16.
Schumer is petrified of a primary because he's not going to win probably against anybody in a primary. You know, Schumer did the right thing, but he handled it badly originally a year ago. He did probably the right thing, but he handled it badly. I think Schumer is incapable of making a deal. They are a mess. They're a party that has no leadership. They have and they have no policy.
I don't see great leaders on the left. I mean, you don't even see people that you love to hate. You see Chuck Schumer read off his notes, and you see Hakeem Jeffries, come out with barbs and claim he's insulted all the time. I don't know anything of impact he's done.
Yeah, so Schumer, I mean, what Trump says about Schumer there is absolutely correct. He got savaged for not shutting down the government when he had the first opportunity earlier this year. So he's never going to let that happen again, because obviously AOC, he's hearing the footsteps from AOC in the background. She could easily challenge him and defeat him in a Senate primary if she doesn't decide to run for president instead. And Jeffries, I just think that sombrero memes have been hilarious. I think they've exposed kind of the humorlessness and oversensitivity of the left, because there's nothing racist about it. You can say, you know, it's silly and not serious, but it's not racist. But what do they go to? It's always, you know, you're bigoted, and I've been subject to a racist attack. That's they're always their go to, and it feels very tired.
So I love the sparring that took place. It was happening a lot during my show yesterday, so I didn't hear a lot of it till later. But it's clearly, if you look at with how RFK approached his hearings, how Kash Patel approached his hearings, and now Pam Bondi, they take it on the Trump style. And they're saying, you know, I know all sides of this issue. How dare you question me? And I want you to be people at home to listen to some of it. Here's Pam Bondi and Adam Schiff, cut 25.
FBI Director Patel said there was no case. And Caroline Levitt is one of the most trustworthy human beings I know.
So
and
was she,
you know,
was
Senator
she,
Schiff,
was she
if
right?
you work for me, was you she, would have been fired well, because you me. Were censured no, by I, Congress I, for lying.
You're the Attorney General. This will be your decision. Will you support?
You don't have to tell me what is my decision well, and what is then, not
then,
my decision.
Then,
I said you
don't have
to. Director
you don't
Patel.
Have to try to.
You, can, you think
you
you've got a gotcha
to,
with Tom Holm and our
excuse
borders
me, excuse
are,
me.
Who's been
have,
out there
excuse
fighting
me.
For our country since
Madam Chair,
Donald Trump took office.
I'm trying to ask a question. Regular order, please. Will you support that request?
Will you apologize to Donald Trump
so
for
I guess,
trying to impeach
I guess the
him
answer is you won't support
that
request.
After you now know that so Joe Biden
me,
tried to cover up Hunter Biden's involvement with
excuse
Ukraine.
Me. This is supposed to be an oversight hearing.
Oversight?
These, excuse me. You can attack me after my time
well,
is over.
Oh, you've attacked all of us, including
you
President
can
Trump
me,
for your entire
You can attack me later,
career.
And I know you've got plenty of canned attacks. We've heard them all day today.
Your thoughts on that sparring?
Yeah, well, clearly everyone's determined to be more combative, one. And two, they know the audience that matters is the president, and he loves it. He absolutely loves it. So it just used to be, you know, I thought the exchange with Blumenthal was very telling, where, you know, he did lie about his Vietnam service, but it's the kind of thing, you just don't mention it, right? It's not mentioned. But why does that rule exist, you know? Or why do Republicans have to honor it if they're getting savaged by Democrats? So they're not honoring those rules. So it makes for great TV, and the person who's enjoying it more than anyone else is sitting in the Oval Office.
Well, they got to know that these guys, when they come out and they're going to try to just destroy you and say, be quiet every time you go to answer a question, that when you get these guys in front of you, whether it's Kash Patel, RFK, Michael Waltz, whoever, they're going to come back at you, and they're going to come back at you hard. A lot of them are used to debating these issues before they got the jobs. So
yeah.
Now they find themselves sitting there going, really? I got to take this from you?
Yeah.
For lack of a better way to describe it. So I want to talk about Joe Biden, if I can. This revelation came out that Biden did not want the intelligence community, the CIA specifically, to disseminate records that show his corrupt business dealings with Ukraine and Romania, by the way. John Ratcliffe declassified the heavily redacted records, which said he believes is an example of politicizing intelligence. Fox News Digital obtained the declassified documents. They're online right now. They discovered during a CIA review of the historical records that Biden says, no, we don't need that. And the CIA stood down.
Yeah, so shocking. You know, I kind of thought we knew everything we were going to learn about Burisma and all the corrupt dealings, but this is something new and shows a distortion of a really important government process in service of covering up his son's influence peddling for the family's benefit. So it's incredibly bad.
And more, New York Times today. Hunter Biden is found to have been conducting business meetings and business deals to sell the land that included the in Romania, where the U.S. embassy was located. And one of his partners, a Chinese company, and he was the attorney for the deal. And his dad was involved. It ultimately fell apart. But one of the conversations on WhatsApp says, I'm the only one putting my family legacy on the line here. So that whole hunt to find out the Biden family's work in and around the Ukraine, it was legitimate. It's the way the president did it with Rudy Giuliani going out ham-handed, threatening everybody. That was the issue. But there was a reason for the president to look into what Joe Biden was up to, especially when Ukraine ends up being in the forefront of the news for the next 7 years, especially after the invasion and what was led to that invasion. So I'm not sure there's ever going to be, I'm not saying that when you look at the reasons for the impeachment, no one ever acknowledged that Biden has dealings there. But mm-hmm. Now we know for sure there was a lot there.
Yeah, it was never on the up and up. And the Romania thing is something, again, we didn't know about that. We've learned. It's good that we've learned about it. But all you really need to know, Brian, was that his Hunter's pay was cut when Joe Biden stopped being vice president. Yeah. It wasn't as valuable anymore, right? So either you're a genius on the regarding the oil business, and your advice and strategic guidance is really important, or it's not, right? That doesn't change. Your value in that respect doesn't mm-hmm. change depending on what your father does, unless the whole thing was an influence peddling game from the beginning.
And for example, and you've seen so much, and you go back, I mean, even though you're a young guy, Rich, I mean, the Watergate scandal, all the Iran-Contra stuff, you know, the controversy around, you know, all the controversies that swirled around Trump for those years, Bush, and the three words that were appeared in that editorial that talked about uranium.
Oh, yeah, right.
Remember all that? You've seen all that. All I could tell you is, the Russian situation that dominated the headlines for 2 years, Trump was saying the whole time, I have nothing to do with Russia. That proved correct. And then Ukraine, people say, what is he doing trying to dig dirt on an opponent? Well, if Trump came out and said, I'm going to launch an investigation into what the previous administration's vice president was doing with Ukraine for possibly private business, if he had called a press conference, announced it, and put a special prosecutor there, and that's the way he handled it, he could have achieved his objective of exposing Joe Biden, and he was a future opponent. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, so there was something there, right? There's legitimate corruption there. There's legitimate public interest in knowing more about it. But the phone call seemed to involve taking away a government, something we were obliged to, Trump was obliged to provide the Ukrainian government, for a political purpose of trying to screw over Joe Biden. Now, I never thought this impeachment made any sense and was a waste of time. But yeah, if he'd just been more forthright about it and said, you know, I'm directing my Justice Department, my FBI, to investigate what could be an instance of deep public corruption, there wouldn't be anything wrong with that, right? I mean, yeah, how could you possibly impeach anyone over that? You know, and that's what they turned around and did to him with less justification in most cases.
Your thoughts about James Comey being arraigned today?
I don't, unless there's documents or, you know, hard evidence that we're not aware of, which I don't discount the possibility. I think this is a weak case, Brian. I don't trust him, but one reason I don't trust him is he's a really careful operator and very clever guy, too clever by half. So I think it's very unlikely that James Comey, of all people, would perjure himself. He's too careful for that. So we'll see where it goes, but I'm a skeptic.
Evidently, President Trump just put on Truth Social, Comey just got a first big break as he has a Biden-appointed judge overseeing the case. So there you go. And the other thing is, I would agree with you if the case is what it is. What I've been told, and I think we both read this, that the only people who really know the level of the evidence are the grand jury and the prosecutors. So mm-hmm. evidently there's more. So we'll see. Andy McCarthy feels like you feel, and he's a conservative attorney for the Southern District of New York, a value contributor here. He feels like you do. So we'll see what happens. I just know, too, what they put the country through over the last few years. I don't mind them having a few stressful moments and forced to lawyer up, because that, man, the people in and around Trump's orbit were ruined, who don't have the financial mm-hmm. wherewithal mm-hmm. to withstand a lot of these cases and had to plea. Rich Lowry, thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Brian.
All right. A lot going on, a full plate. And by the way, that wasn't even one of the big three. Bottom of the hour, Congressman Brian Fitzpatrick, the Republican CIA, former CIA guy, subcommittee on CIA member of Ways and Means, but a former FBI guy. Don't move.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen,
the more you'll know.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
You are a transformative president. And since then, the transformation in the economy, unprecedented commitments of NATO partners to defense spending, peace from India, Pakistan, through to Azerbaijan, Armenia, disabling Iran as a force of terror. And now, and I'm running out of time, but this is many respects the most important.
That
wasn't where it was going.
So these guys are getting along a lot better. Obviously, they did talk about yesterday the Prime Minister Carney and President Trump. He said a lot of nice things, and obviously he meant them. He was running through some basic things about some of those peace agreements that they brought in, and also bombing out of Iran and the increased money for NATO. And they are getting closer and closer to trade. And in fact, the ministers who were debating this back and forth said that they moved a lot closer after the two leaders met, considering where they were with the previous leader. And when Carney first got in, Carney won because everyone was so anti-Trump, and the conservative was looked at as a Trumper, and therefore the people of Canada rally around Carney. So he gets that liberal perspective in Canada, which is not really helping that country, but I can get into that another time. They're spending 1.4% on their military, but they do want to work out when it comes to aluminum, when it comes to steel, when it comes to agriculture products. And I think they said they got closer yesterday, but it's kind of cool to see another world leader come out and say that, and unprompted. President doesn't mind it. We all know he likes compliments more than most, but everything the guy said was true. He said, according to Dominic LeBlanc, who is Canada's Minister of Bilateral Trade, "I'm happy and content right now because I think we have momentum now that we did not have when we woke up in the morning, but we have not yet finished our work." What is the big deal? A lot. Also, the USMCA, NAFTA, this is the subsequent trade deal to NAFTA. They like it. But I think that the president's now looking more bilateral because it's up now. Rather than redoing the USMCA with three countries, I think he wants to do one and one. I'm not sure how that works. The principal products that they're talking about, too, is cars and trucks. And the president's going to put a tariff on trucks now. And I don't think Canada's happy about that. So we'll do that. I'd love to see Canada done. I also would love to see India done. And that would also help the economy. You get some certainty there. Now people are running to gold. I'm not going to go inside the numbers. This isn't a business show. But people are running to gold instead of the dollar. I think they're a little unsure about where everything's going. And some of that has to do with AI. We had Tristan Harris on with us on this show, and then I had him on One Nation. And one of the things that stuck with me is because of AI, the amount of new hires of kids coming out of college, young adults coming out of college hires, is down 16% from the previous year. So many of these jobs can be saved, and these major companies can be saved with AI once they learn to apply it. So when it comes to jobs, there's really some uncertainty. It makes people say, let me grab some gold. When we come back, the latest on Ukraine, the latest on the peace talks taking place right now in Cairo, Egypt, with Brian Fitzpatrick of Pennsylvania. Don't move.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Are you concerned about the delays at airports, and how do you see the shutdown?
Oh, sure. I mean, they're all Democrat delays. There are delays at the airport. That's standard. And again, this is something that every day we put forth a bill. It's just a continuation. It's a very simple thing to sign and very simple to do. And I really think that these are people that I think they have nothing to lose. They have a party that's out of control. They have no leader. Nobody knows who the leader is.
So that is President Trump yesterday. We'll hear from him today. There's so many different things going on right now. James Comey has now pled guilty and plans to ask the judge to throw out all the charges as the president pled not guilty, I should say. But that judge was appointed by Joe Biden, so the president took note of that. We do not know the whole case against him. I don't think Comey knows, but the grand jury did, and they did indict him on those accounts of perjury. And I think more could be coming down the line. We will see. A lot of legal experts say it's a reach. We'll see what else they have in their folder. Joining us now is Congressman Brian Fitzpatrick. He's on the Intelligence Committee, chairman of the Subcommittee on CIA, member of Ways and Means. And the congressman is part of the Problem Solvers Caucus. He's also a former FBI guy. Congressman, welcome back.
Morning, Brian.
So they told you guys to go home, right? The House did their job. It's up to the Senate.
Yeah, I mean, I'm here in D.C. You know, I'm still trying to, you know, convince some of my Democrat colleagues to do the right thing here, to do exactly what they did several months ago, which is vote on the same exact thing, a clean CR to give the appropriators more time. But unfortunately, Brian, for a lot of my colleagues down here, they are convinced that their view of the world is the only view, and any means justify that ends, including being completely hypocritical. So we're trying to work through it. You know, obviously they want changes to – or I'm sorry, they want an extension, a permanent extension of the ACA premium tax credits. That's a larger conversation, but we got to get the government open first.
And what do you think is going to break this down? Because it looks like the Democrats are not looking to get off. They only have three senators jump ship. They need five more. Do you think that from what you could tell, is the other body working the refs or working these senators to see if they'll flip for their on their own behalf?
Yeah, I think what's going on here is you have a lot of people that have painted themselves into a corner politically, and they're looking for an off-ramp, and they need to be provided that off-ramp to save face. So the Senate, the House has passed the bill, right? So there's really nothing more for the House to do. What the Senate needs to do is to get assurances to enough of the Democrat senators that not part of the CR, but separate and potentially right after the CR vote, the clean CR vote, that some type of premium tax credit extension or reform be put in place. Really what the Republicans are looking for, Brian, on the premium tax credits is currently they go to the insurance company, not to the individual, and currently there's no income caps. You could be earning $600,000 a year, and you're getting credits. They don't need them, right? So these should be easy compromises, but what I think needs to happen here is we need to give an off-ramp to our Democrat colleagues to politically help them save face so they don't look completely absurd. But we need to, they know that they're being hypocritical here. They know that they're the cause of this shutdown. We need to give them an off ramp to, and we need to be the adults in the room and get that done.
Now, some of the polling is going against you guys, as usual. It seems Republicans, no matter what side you're on, minority, majority, they seem to always blame you. Here's Molly Murphy on MSNBC. She's a progressive Democratic strategist, cut 20.
Shutdowns aren't popular. Polling is going to find people don't want the government to shut down. They expect that elected leaders can figure out some type of solution to avoid this. So to some degree, it reflects badly on both parties. But the interesting thing about shutdowns is that people don't decide who to blame based on whether or not the government's shut down or how long it lasts. They decide who to blame based on the issue that the shutdown is being litigated over, and that's healthcare. And an interesting poll that came out in the middle of the shutdown found that only 28% of Americans say that they are very concerned about being personally impacted by the shutdown, but 60% of Americans are very concerned that 4 million people are going to lose their health insurance if these tax credits expire. And so the pain point between the shutdown and what the shutdown is actually over is totally out of whack and against the Republicans in this. And so the blame is shifting towards these Republicans as Democrats have defined this shutdown on terms of health care. It's the right fight.
And you would think that's the fight that they would have had to stop the big, beautiful bill, but they weren't. They didn't even know what to do with it. But now they found one element in it that shows that with the premiums coming out soon this month, that if they go up, they'll blame the Republicans on it. So do you think that she is right, that now they're making it about health care instead of frustration?
Well, the problem with her argument is that the Republicans, I mean, you even heard Marjorie Taylor Greene say this, that there is no disagreement that we have to address this. The only question is, are we going to start this brand new precedent that we are going to attach these policy riders to continuing resolutions? The Democrats were adamantly against it when Republicans tried to do it with Planned Parenthood. The Democrats were against it when the Republicans tried to do it with the border security several years ago. And now they're doing the very same thing. So we just need to set the baseline standard, Brian. What is the rule? Is the rule that the continuing CR is the baseline position that we all get on board with to buy more time for the appropriators to get all 12 appropriation bills passed, and we can, in good faith, negotiate a premium tax credit solution? It's important to note, Brian, that the current state of the law when it comes to premium tax credits, no income caps, so the uber wealthy can get these. They go to the health insurance provider and not the individual. That's something that they don't they're not being honest about as well. And we want to fix this because all the current numbers are based on COVID level spending. So
Jen Kiggins, Republican from Virginia, has a bill that has numerous Democrat co-sponsors, numerous Republican co-sponsors, that will take us down this path. The Problem Solvers Caucus supports it. That's the solution. But we have to get the government open. That's really what the issue is here. Are we going to start setting this precedent of tying these policy riders to CRs or not?
All right. We'll see where that goes. I also want to talk about another area of expertise, and that's intelligence, overlooking the CIA. This Arctic Frost operation has been exposed by John Ratcliffe, the new CIA director. And now there's bipartisan concerns about it, one of which is, like, you have over 10 Republican senators who had their phone records and basically were spied on during the investigation that Dax Smith was doing against Donald Trump. Here's Kash Patel, cut 36.
They put this information, those that weaponized the FBI and prior leadership at DOJ and FBI, they took this information where they subpoenaed 8 sitting United States senators, put it in a lockbox, put that lockbox in a vault, and then put that vault in a cyber place where no one can see or search these files. They're called restricted access and prohibited access. Restricted access means some people get to see it. Prohibited access, you put it in there when you want to hide it from the world, and that takes the authorization of the attorney general and the director of the FBI. So not only did they weaponize this law enforcement, but when we got in there, and when I got in as the FBI director, from my experience as Russiagate, I knew where to look and what rooms to open and what doors to kick down. And that's what we did.
So that's what's been exposed. Here's what Lindsey Graham found out when his phone records were subpoenaed by or taken by the CIA. Cut 37.
Whoever I can sue on behalf of the future of people who will come after me, we cannot allow the abuse of power to go unannounced. I mean, unchecked. One guy went to jail for a year in Crossfire Hurricane. Comey is finally being looked at after all these years. If they don't pay a price now, they'll keep doing it. But I just want you to understand, from the time President Trump announced he was running for president in 2022, by 2023, there were 91 indictments against him for a bunch of BS.
And he's outraged, and he's chairman of the Judiciary Committee, and they're going after his phone records. What are your thoughts?
Well, the good news here, Brian, is we're going to be able to get the answers to every single one of these questions. So the way the FBI proceeds on cases, they follow something called the DIOG, the Domestic Investigation and Operations Guide. It's basically the Bible of do's and don'ts. It sets the approval levels for different types of cases. So there's going to be a paper trail. There has to be, right? If you are doing anything against what they call a sensitive investigative matter. It could be a member of the media, a member of Congress, a member of a religious organization, any protected class, as they call them, from an investigative standpoint, has to be approved by the director themselves. So there's going to be a paper trail of what the justification was to open these cases, what investigative steps they took, who approved it along the way. We're going to get all those documents. We're going to bring all those people in, and they're going to have to answer for their decisions.
So if you're investigating Donald Trump, do you see a reason, if you're doing that investigation, politics aside, Congressman Fitzpatrick, do you see a reason to go after Josh Hawley, Lindsey Graham's phone records?
No, I don't. I mean, listen, this we're going to find all the answers out. I will say this. It's highly, highly suspect. The burden is going to be on them to explain why they felt the need to do this, because that is a very, very dangerous Rubicon to cross when you start doing things like that. That's why the FBI has these very, very high approval levels in place that the director himself has to sign off on some of these steps. So we're going to get all this information. Your viewers can be rest assured it's all going to come out. We're going to know who approved what, who did what, and they're going to testify before Congress.
So where are we at right now in the Russia and Ukraine? We see that there's no talk scheduled. We see that Russia is hitting nonstop drone with drones. Now they're aiming for Lviv. What's the state of that conflict?
Well, we're awaiting the president's final decision on Tomahawks. I think that will be a huge inflection point. I do think that President Trump is now seeing much more clearly, given that he has given Putin a chance, he brought him here, try to work with him in good faith to do everything possible to achieve peace. I think, the verdict is now out on that Vladimir Putin, you cannot operate with him in good faith because he doesn't operate in good faith. The only thing that he responds to, just like the bully in the schoolyard that we all grew up with, they only respond to force, and you have to put them in an incredibly compromising position. I think the way to do it here is strangle them economically through the sanctions bill that me and Lindsey Graham have. He's got the bill in the Senate. I got it in the House. We have well over 100 co-sponsors in the House. He has 85 senators in the Senate, Brian. You can't get 85 senators to agree the sky's blue. There's 85 co-sponsors in the Senate to this bill. It's designed to give President Trump more arrows in his quiver, more leverage against Putin. And we're just working with the White House to finalize the remaining details. But that's got to be the next thing we move on. And Lindsey and I are committed to doing that this month.
Do you see any the weapons are flowing now in from into Ukraine? Are they flowing at a good rate?
They are. I mean, you know, it's, as you know, they go through Zhezhov, they go through Poland. There's not too many entry points that they can go through. And it's never fast enough, Brian. I mean, the logistics are tough. And there's also inventory challenges. Russia has been stockpiling weapons for generations, not decades, generations. They're pulling out the stuff from 100 years ago, and it's showing up on the Ukrainian battlefield. The West, Europe, and the United States have had a very, very tough time just from a supply standpoint, keeping up, keeping pace, and manufacturing the stuff and then going through the logistical process of getting it over there. So everyone's doing their best. I've been over there a lot. I'm going to be going over again soon to visit with President Zelensky and Andriy Yermak, who is his chief, to just get an update to see how they're doing and bring that message back here and fight like hell on the House floor.
Absolutely. And then you maybe get back to work and then we can get going here and then maybe fund the government. Congressman Brian Fitzpatrick, always great. Thanks so much.
You bet, sir. Thank you.
All right. Back in a moment.
Illuminating. Intriguing. Inculcating.
I know some of these words.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
Judge against Varland in his career is 2-for-5 with a pair of home runs. In this game, he's 2-for-2.
Hits a drive down the line. If it's fair, it's his moment. It is. It's tied. Judge has arrived. There's a drive.
Just a great call on Fox, and yes, I'm prejudiced, but just a fantastic atmosphere in both Toronto and New York. And I know it's just one series, but you had Canada and U.S. At the White House yesterday. So the Yankees were destroyed in a way I've never seen a team destroyed in the playoffs. I've never. And then they go back and they're losing 6-1 at home. And I'm thinking to myself, are they really going to go out like this? For New York, if you're listening around the country, they might as well have not made the playoffs. Is this the way they're going to go out against Toronto, even though they tied in first and Toronto won on tiebreakers? But Judge, who is hitting 500 but not for power, hits a double and then hits a home run. So by the fourth inning, they had come all the way back, and that tied it up. Jazz Chisholm puts him over the top. The question is now, in Game 4, do the Yankees use 48,000 people, the momentum of Judge's bat, who is as great as he is, and he's a generational player and a person, but as great as he is, has not done it in the postseason. Now he can honestly say he's hitting 500 plus in the Pete, it's over 500 now, right?
Over 500, yeah. And he's, yeah, I think, over 600 on base percentage.
I mean, this includes the Boston series.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
he's leading the playoffs, I believe.
So, I mean, I hate when great players, great people struggle in the postseason, because then people go, oh, you don't win in the clutch. You could be a total, you know, you could actually hit 250 during the year, 12 homers. But if you do in the postseason, that's what people remember. Seems unfair, but that's the way it is, especially in New York. And now we'll see what happens in
great
Game 4.
Athletes in general, like, look at Dan Marino. He's as great. All the records that he held when he retired, everybody's like, well, he never won the Super Bowl.
Right, but you know what's worse, though? Fran Tarkenton, who didn't play well in the Super Bowl.
He got four shots.
I think Marino lost 20-3. Or was that Woodley that lost? It might have been Woodley.
Woodley, but I know when Marino lost, I remember the buzz was, oh, he's young. He's the best quarterback in football. He's going to have plenty more chances, and he never sniffed another Super Bowl.
I know. That is crazy. So we'll see what happens today. It's exciting. You know, baseball has not been that exciting. And I'm looking forward to this tonight at 8 o'clock. It should be good. I think I have some time. So there's a lot of comedians getting a ton of money to go to Saudi Arabia. And you make your own decision. I think that country is trying to reform like no other country. It's got a long way to go. And I know their hands are dirty in 9/11. I'm reading some of the family lawsuits. So they're getting a lot of money to go over, just like a lot of golfers want to live. I get it. Just like Cristiano Ronaldo took his millions and went to Saudi Arabia and played in those leagues. So now all these guys are going over, and Adam Carolla is a great stand-up himself, said, you go ahead and take the money, but don't go to Saudi Arabia and put down America. Cut 45.
I think the problem with the Bill Burrs and the Chappelles or anybody in general is if you're going to pitch like Aziz Ansari, if you're going to pitch woke bullshit here about people and people being oppressed and violence against women and all the you throw up every day. Spare us when you go over there and take a check. That's the whole thing. What I don't like is the rail against oppressive, you know, Trump's an oppressive dictator.
Yeah.
We'll go take a check from an oppressive dictator.
I love it. Isn't that a great point? It's a great point. You know, you want to go over and take the money. Okay, I understand that. You know, you can't, no country's perfect. You could say, I'm not going to the UK. I don't like the way they let too many immigrants in, or I'm not going to. We watch and a lot of people, including me, are critical of the NBA for where they sold their soul for China. I get it. But if you're going to go over there and take it, don't go over and kill America. I think it's a good sign that you could have fun about America, but don't give me this anti-American stuff overseas while we have the freedom to go over there while you're looking at people that basically allowed women to drive 4 years ago, you know, who oppress every minority. It might have had a hand in 9/11. Doesn't mean I don't acknowledge the reforms and how vital it would be in our new relationship. But Adam Carolla once again nails it. Brian Kilmeade Show.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's Brian Kilmeade right in Midtown Manhattan. We're around the country, around the world. Across the street from us yesterday, pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas protest. It's so embarrassing. New York is such a joke. These people, if they do live here, if they represent the people in New York, it's just embarrassing. If they're coming from the outside, I think it's got to be unwound and found out. I mean, whose agenda is this? You really believe on October 7th you should be rallying for the Palestinians? Are you kidding? Quick announcement, Fox Nation Patriot Awards 2025 coming up November 6th. It's coming up quick, and tickets are going really quick. It's at my college, Long Island University. So go to, one way to do it, you go to Ticketmaster, but you could always go to foxnation.com/patriotawards and then pick your tickets out. And then you have opportunities to see the morning show, see the five. And then there's meet and greets for Fox and Friends fans, which I was supposed to do the five, but now I can't because I have to go to the meet and greet because I'm really good at greeting people, it seems. Standing by this hour on this show, Senator Rick Scott, and the bottom of the hour, Senator James Lankford. And we're following all the events happening on Capitol Hill right now, including just a little short time ago, James Comey turned himself in as he has been arraigned after being indicted by a grand jury. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
People don't know the rationale behind the deployment of National Guard troops in my state.
I wish you loved Chicago as much as you hate President Trump. And currently, the National Guard are on the way to Chicago.
That is Pam Bondi yesterday. It's combative as heck. The Bondi brawl, the Trump team's decision to take his combative style and put it into their hearings, which has changed the dynamics in Washington. You got RFK, you have Kash Patel, and now Pam Bondi. I love it.
Number two.
An interesting poll that came out in the middle of the shutdown found that only 28% of Americans say that they are very concerned about being personally impacted by the shutdown. But 60% of Americans are very concerned that 4 million people are going to lose their health insurance if these tax credits expire.
There you go. And that is a Democratic strategist, Molly Murphy. Shutdown continues as air travel and now back pay becomes essential issue. I think it's time for the GOP to work on those vulnerable Democrats, convert five, and then start this country up again.
Number one.
This president is determined to federalize the National Guard and to occupy our cities with the military. It's unconscionable. It's unthinkable. But this is America today.
this is an embarrassing mayor of Chicago. ICE bulking up, not backing down, as the Dems again find themselves defending chaos and crime. Hope America sees this as clear as I do. So what am I talking about when chaos and crime? If I showed you Portland 100 days ago, you see them outside the federal building, the purple hair, the nose rings, the black stocking masks. It basically, it's a form of Antifa. And they're sitting on the outside. Cops are letting them do it. And the ICE has moved out of their building to protect their building. They're shooting lasers in their face, trying to break the windows. So they, of course, the president said, I'm tired of looking at this. I'm going to send in federal officers to back up ICE because the local cops aren't doing it. And now you have local officials saying that there's no problem here. The president's making it a problem because he wants to cancel elections. What are you even talking about? Cancel elections? They're just trying to assert themselves and try to have Biden become a dictator. The Oregon governor claims there's no national security threat in her state. Has she been paying attention? She met with Secretary Noem yesterday, reiterated again there's no insurrection in Oregon, but we see things differently. You are not one of the ICE agents who have to worry about being followed home, who have to worry about going to work if they're going to be ambushed because of the app that tracks ICE officials just now taking out the ICE store. And then you look at what's happening in Chicago. The Texas National Guard has deployed 200 troops to Illinois for federal protection. Why? Because the local cops aren't doing it. Because Pritzker is energizing his people to act against American law enforcement because they want to crack down on illegal immigrant criminals and crime in general. What are you even talking about? Cut to.
In the small suburban village of Broadview, with a population of 8,000, federal agents have turned two blocks of protest areas into a war zone by firing chemical agents and tear gas at peaceful protesters.
Peaceful because you're not there. Peaceful because you're sitting there with your private security and in the governor's mansion. Peaceful because you're not out and about. Peaceful because they never asked you, Governor Pritzker, to round up all the illegals you let into your city, into your state, and allow them to use federal funds, social funds and taxpayer dollars to support them. This president's rounding them up. So for 260 days, they're going to send 200 National Guard in there because you won't let your cops and state police do anything. That's why Border Patrol is picking them up. Did you see some of these people? Did you know there were bounties on the heads of ICE officials by street gangs who you say aren't a problem that you can't handle in Chicago? Clearly, that's the case. If you want to hear some out-of-control statements, I'm going to play two that I think are as bad as it gets. Cut three.
They're raiding neighborhoods where instead of going after the bad guys, they're just picking up people who are brown and black and then checking their credentials. Are you a U.S. citizen? I don't know about you, but I don't carry around papers that say I'm a U.S. citizen.
Let's fact check this idiot. All right. Since Operation Midway Blitz, that's what they call it, began in Illinois last month, ICE and CBP have arrested 1,000 illegal aliens plus, including the worst of the worst pedophiles, child abusers, kidnappers, gang members, and armed robbers. If you want to see the pictures, they're available. We also have arrested multiple people of the street gang from Venezuela, TDA, and illegal aliens with criminal histories that include drug trafficking, child rape, murder, and other violent convictions. You should be, these are my words now, you should be thanking them. You should be saying how you would have gotten them anyway. But not acknowledging that they're doing this is just pure politics because you see yourself as a president. Allegations that the DHS and law enforcement officially engage in racial profiling is disgusting, reckless, and categorically false. Now, on the earlier point, when he said about Broadview, about this suburban community, he goes, this is neither unconstitutional nor an invasion. President Trump has the authority under the Constitution to deploy troops wherever they're stationed to defend facilities from attacks. Whether it's the ICE facility in Broadview or the courthouse in Portland, we will defend federal property wherever they are under siege. Now, I ask you, now, you know, I voted for Trump and I'm a supporter of this. I know he's for cracking down on crimes. Oftentimes, the working class areas, minority areas, are the ones suffering most from this criminal activity. So he wants to go and help people on paper seems didn't vote for him. Then he wants to be able to have federal officials scoop up illegal immigrants. That's why he got elected. And you are making it harder. This is how sick, this is a mix of how corrupt and sick our college system is, along with how ridiculous this mayor and governor are. one of the people involved in the blocking of ICE agents that had them forced to get out of their cars because the civilian cars literally blocked and hemmed them in is the associate professor at the University of Chicago, name unpronounceable. The Department of Comparative Human Development, like we need that, was arrested on October 3rd and charged with two counts of aggravated battery to a government employee, a class three felony, and two counts of resisting and obstructing peace. So this professor not only was found to be corrupt and acting in a criminal way, but resisting arrest, which is a class A misdemeanor. The Cook County Sheriff's Office confirmed everything that we said, and that was written. It's all written up on Fox News Digital. The administration pounded back with Trisha McLaughlin, saying our message to J.B. Pritzker, get out of your mansion, see Chicago. If J.B. Pritzker actually walked the streets of his own city, he would see domestic terrorists, violent rioters, attacking police officers, and the scourge of violent crime as a direct result of his own policies. This is real. And this is an area in which I don't care if 10% of the country agrees with me. I know I'm 100% right. And you know that Border Patrol, ICE officials, ATF, FBI is there for one reason, to crack down on crime. And that's the problem. In Memphis, you have a Democratic mayor who wants to be effective, so he's letting them do their thing. And by the way, you also have a situation in D.C. with a Democratic mayor who let D.C. do their thing. And now you have, I think, other cities that are going to be ripe for this. But if you are a mayor who is concerned about crime and your people, and the federal government says, I'm going to be coming in to help you out, and you now not only don't want the help, you're now politicking against it and putting these officers in danger. Do you know what he called them yesterday? Called them thugs. So another inexcusable behavior is Senator Jeffrey Merkley of Oregon. Here he is saying that Trump's making all this up. Cut six.
There have been a few scuffles, mostly instigated by the folks, the federal agents that Trump has sent out there. It's shocking to watch a member of the Trump team walk up to a woman who's totally obeying instructions and just spraying her straight in the face with pepper spray, watching them march protesters three blocks away. Protesters are peaceful, but they have videographers behind them, and then they start throwing down pepper balls and tear gas to film it to try to create the impression of chaos where there wasn't chaos. It's Trump creating the chaos because he wants violence and chaos to justify more authoritarian power.
So this idiot, and he is an idiot, actually believes that these agents working for Donald Trump like Stephen Miller and or Vice President Vance said, whatever you do, take peaceful protesters, march them three blocks away and throw tear gas at them and smoke bombs and harass them along the way. That's what this clown says. Instead of you think ICE agents acting how they've been trained to protect their buildings and see nothing but fomenting violence there to the point where even the local cops had to get involved a few days ago. So when we come back, I'm going to pose some of these questions to Rick Scott. He's also going to bring me inside the effort I think the Republicans are underway with to try to convert five Democrats to join three others and open up the government.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Schumer is petrified of primary because he's not going to win probably against anybody in a primary. You know, Schumer did the right thing, but he handled it badly originally a year ago. He did probably the right thing, but he handled it badly. I think Schumer's incapable of making a deal. They are a mess. They're a party that has no leadership. They have no policy.
That is President Trump yesterday. I imagine he'll talk more about it today. The lockout, 6-7 days old, hard to keep track. But now we have air traffic controllers calling in sick. We're just not showing up. It's really going to make people, feel that stress because it's not just the rich that fly. That's something that everyone's expecting to do somewhat on time. So joining us now is Senator Rick Scott. Senator, how's this? How we have a vote coming up today? Do you think it'll go any different than the other votes?
No, this is Groundhog Day. Nothing's going to change. Schumer is, he said he wants health care for illegals.
He wants government to pay for abortions. He wants government to pay for trans surgery. He doesn't want to live in reality. This is all caused by one thing. Obamacare is a failure. It's caused premiums to skyrocket, co-payments, deductibles, and the Democrats cannot have a conversation to try to fix it.
And it looks like they're not acknowledging that. What Joe Biden did is throw money at it. And now when you guys try to take that money back.
All he did was, Brian, he tried to mask the problem by giving money to people. You can be a millionaire and get these subsidies. So this doesn't, what they're talking about, it wouldn't change anything about Obamacare. It just says the subsidies that Biden created for people up making 700% of poverty. You could be a millionaire, okay? All right? We said, we don't want them to feel the cost of Obamacare, so we're going to give them some money on top of paying for illegals, abortion, trans surgery, everything. So I don't see how there's a deal. I think Trump's right. Schumer cannot do a deal. I mean, what he's asking for, Republicans cannot vote for.
I want you to hear what Newt said. He knows a few things about lockouts. The former speaker, cut 19.
In the process, they're giving President Trump the opportunity to focus on their bureaucracies, their key areas, their programs. Mm. And you've already seen him, for example, suspend payment for a multi-billion-dollar project in Chicago. In the next couple of weeks, if this goes on, you'll see, I think, a very substantial reshaping of the federal government in a way that Democrats will look back on later and just think, how was I this dumb and how did I let this happen?
So he's thinking turning up the heat by freezing more programs and cutting more jobs. Your thoughts?
Well, look, I hope what the president does is balance the budget through this. We're running $2 trillion deficits. We have $37 trillion worth of debt. Inflation's not beaten yet. Look at the price of gold. It's telling us something. So I think we have to start living reality. Our budget's out of whack. Okay, we are Obamacare is a failure. Let's start solving the problems of the country. But the Democrats, Schumer can't do it. He just doesn't know how to do it. All he's ever done is just throw a whole bunch of money at everything. And Republicans are finally. I don't know how Republicans can vote for giving health care to illegals. I don't know how they can do it.
So even when the president says, hey, we'll talk, or the speaker says, we'll talk about that in the interim, restart the government and we'll get to that before November. Is there anything that you see that could be a responsible way to attack the loss of money flowing into healthcare? I know that you said, and I agree, some of these people are getting 400% north of the poverty line. If some six-figure incomes are getting...
The millionaires. Millionaires are getting this, Brian.
Yeah.
So let's solve the problem. Here's what you have to do.
Okay.
All right. Let's acknowledge Obamacare failed. All right. So how do you fix it? I used to run the biggest hospital company. You've got to create a less expensive delivery system. You've got to allow people to buy whatever insurance they want to buy, but telling them what they have to buy. Right. You've got to make sure they're spending some of their own money. I mean, give the money to I want people to get health care. Give the money to the person that you want to make sure they get health care. Let them buy what they want. Quit you telling them what they should buy. Let them, they can figure it out. My dad had a sixth grade education. He could figure this out. He knew what kind of health care he needed. Quit telling people how to lead their lives. And then you'll drive the cost of healthcare down, okay? And then you won't need all these subsidies.
So, Senator Scott, on a different note, we know the president and Secretary of War gave their speech yesterday about the direction of the military. One of the you're an X's and O's guys, dollars and cents. You know we have to expand our industrial base. Have you seen any substantive move to do that?
I think there's a lot of conversations going on. I've talked to a lot of our defense industry. I think there's a lot of conversations going on. I know the Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, is focused on it. I know the president's focused on it. I've got a hearing today that's focused on, our military's got to stop buying drugs from China. What if, not just rare earths, what if they stop giving us drugs? We'll run out of drugs in weeks. Pete Hegseth is doing a great job at trying to tackle the issues. And that's what this president's doing. We've got to start tackling the issues that have just been, we just never tackled the issues. We did, you know, we just let them, you know, get worse and worse and worse. In business, I'm a business guy. You have to solve your problems every day. What's my biggest problem today? I'm going to solve it. I'm going to come up with a better plan.
And you're going to have the hearings today. Do you have any prediction how long this lockout lasts?
I think it'll at least last for another 10 days. I think the Democrats, they don't care about the people, and they don't care about the American public. Like in my state, Brian, as an example, if you want to buy a house, we're in hurricane season, you can't go get flood insurance now. So maybe somebody might lend you money.
Yep. But there's a lot of issues. Senator Rick Scott, 10 more days. Wow. Senator James Lankford next. We'll get other perspective.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
A couple of years ago, I said very candidly that the right wing in this country wants a rematch of the Civil War. I want that to sit in right now because the President of the United States of America has declared war on the people of Chicago and people across America.
That irresponsible mayor who's so ineffective that only 19% of the people think he's doing a good job. I don't know where those 19% are. To me, continues to underline he's all about race. He's not about effectiveness. And he's not about prosecuting crime. The exact antithesis of what I believe Chicago needs. Senator James Lankford, we've been watching the sparring in Los Angeles first. We see D.C. I'm very curious to get your perspective. But now we see the unrest in Portland and Chicago, and they do not want the president to bring in federal troops to suppress it, and they do not want to cooperate with ICE. Where do you think this conflict is heading?
Yeah, I hope this conflict is headed towards peace on it. That's where it should be. These are agitators and protesters that are there deliberately to say, we want more people illegally present in the country. So they're going to ICE facilities and trying to protest and trying to be able to block ICE agents from actually doing their work. Yeah. It is unbelievable to me that we're even having a discussion if federal law enforcement can actually enforce federal law in any part in the country, or we have to bring in the National Guard to protect federal law enforcement facilities because we have left-wing protesters that are there trying to be able to cause chaos and riots around federal law enforcement facilities. I mean, who would have ever discussed this? And the Democrats are out defending them, saying we're supportive of the people fighting against law enforcement, so much so that the National Guard has to come in and protect law enforcement. We're at a different level.
Right, because local law enforcement won't. But do you hear what Mayor Johnson said? Republicans want a rematch on the Civil War. Does he even know who was in the Civil War? Do they know what party Lincoln was in, by the way? You should be factually correct, number one. Number two is, where does that even come from? I mean, and why is he allowed to get away with that?
It's a free country. You can say whatever you want to on it, but it's wrong to be able to say the Civil War killed 600,000 Americans. Yes, the party of Lincoln, the Republican Party, was the one who was saying we need to be able to free the slaves and we need to have law and order in our country. But no one wants a civil war in our country, nor should we even provoke that. We need to be talking about how we're resolving things, not how we're headed towards violence.
It's not even accurate. You're talking about your own law enforcement. You decide that. The governor called ICE a bunch of thugs. Really? They go through the academy. Those are the men and women that he might have friends and family in. Because they don't like what they're doing. They're thugs.
These are folks that I'm sure many of them from Illinois, that they just love their country and love law and order. There are folks that are working on the Border Patrol that they go deliberately to be able to serve because they have a love for their country and they have a love for security and a love to be able to take care of their family. Just like when you sign up for the military, you want to be able to protect our nation. When you're signing up for law enforcement, you're literally signing up to serve and protect. So those are not thugs. Those are individuals that are there to actually protect. This is the core issue on the Black Lives Matter whole movement that came up was that law enforcement are bad, they're evil, they're terrible, and we need to get rid of the police and defund the police. The nation has rejected that out of hand and said, hold on, just like in every profession, whether it's teachers, whether it's in politics, whether it's in broadcast, there are bad actors in every single place, as as there are in law enforcement, but it is such a tiny fraction. There are so many people in law enforcement, federal and local, that are there for all the right reasons. We don't need to call them thugs. We don't need to say they're trying to start a civil war. They're trying to be able to serve their neighbors.
So on Portland in particular, I'm really concerned that they don't think that we understand that these riots were happening for 100 straight days, that those buildings were not safe, that ICE was being harassed, and the local cops weren't clearing them out. So Kristi Noem talked to the governor. Listen to what she said. Cut nine.
Well, as soon as I landed, I met with the governor. She came and met me at the airport, and every question that we asked as far as safety and security here, she deferred to her chief of police, said that I would meet with him later in the day. So I did. When I got to the ICE facility, I met with him and also the superintendent of the state police. I told them what we wanted. We wanted more security here at the building, a bigger buffer zone to keep our officers safe. We wanted to have their streets opened up again and not let the anarchists run this city anymore, that we would ask them to continue to back us up like we've been asking for, instead of what they've been doing the last several months, and which is just leaving our officers hang out to dry.
And essentially the message to them, to her, was we don't have a problem.
Yeah, again, their focus is what can we do to be able to protect people that are illegally present in the country? How do we keep them here and encourage more people to be able to be here rather than, hey, why don't we encourage legal immigration and why don't we protect citizens of the United States on it? This should not be a battle against one nationality against another. This is the United States of America. We are a nation that we have borders that should be protected. We have law that should be abided by, and federal law enforcement that's there, whether it's ICE, whether it's ERO, whether it's Customs Border Protection, whoever it may be, they need to be able to do their job. They are following the law, and when an anarchist comes in and wants to be able to block someone from following the law, it is clear what is right and wrong at that point.
Yeah, and I want to get to lockout. I know it's frustrating for everybody, but I want to tell you, I think I found the reason why Democrats are pushing back on this. Siena did a poll. I know they lean left, but here it is. 54% of the country favor deporting illegals, 90% of Republicans, 52% of independents, but 20% of Democrats. So when they say that, if I'm running for president, who do you think Pritzker's talking to?
Yeah.
Who do you think Newsom's talking to?
Yep, that's the challenge. They're listening to their far left. They're just obsessed with anything that Trump says has to be terrible. Even if Trump is saying, why don't we follow the law?
Yeah.
You know, the law, they keep having these no kings rally, but what they're ignoring is the law is king in America, and we need to be able to follow the law. And literally they're in moments saying, no, the law doesn't matter anymore. Our preferences matter. No, the law matters in America.
Right. So I don't know how this ends. You don't have this problem in Oklahoma, and we have two great affiliates there, and they go, Brian, why are you talking about other places? But talking about this country, this is an issue. And I just think the Democrats find themselves defending chaos and criminals because all Trump doesn't want votes in Chicago. He's not running again. He doesn't want votes in Illinois. He's not running again. He's trying to get law and order because the local authorities won't do it. Memphis seems to be working because the governor wants to cooperate and welcomes the free help, the taxpayer dollar help. So, Senator, for you in particular, with this lockdown, we're 6 or 7 days in, and Democrats want to make it about health care. You're saying just fund the government while we talk about it. We have the same argument since Obamacare came out. How do you see this coming out as the Democrats insist on continuing to fund Obamacare at pandemic levels?
Yeah, they are. So this is the aptly named Affordable Care Act. Democrats keep coming back every couple of years and saying we need more money, more money, more money, or rates are going to go up, rates are going to go up, because they realize it's not affordable. They prefer using the term Obamacare now, which was the Republican term, because they can't say it's the Affordable Care Act anymore because everybody knows it's not affordable. Rates are going up. Here's what they have said. They have said if Republicans don't give us billions of dollars, and it is $450 billion they're looking for, to keep the government open 7 weeks more to be able to extend these COVID-era subsidies. They're saying rates are going to go up, but what they're not saying is rates are going up regardless, because the Affordable Care Act is not affordable. It is driving insurance rates up for everyone. This is about 20 million Americans that are getting these subsidies. And by the way, during COVID, they uncapped it. So you can get these subsidies. If you make $500,000 a year, you can get these subsidies as well. So they uncapped the subsidies. There's all kinds of fraud that is built into it. They doubled the number of people getting the subsidies during just the Biden administration. They're saying they want to keep that going. But what they're doing now is saying if we don't get all these extra dollars for this group of people, then we're going to have federal employees, members of the military, not get their pay.
So do you get?
Well,
do
you know
think,
what? Let's let them get their pay on it, and then we'll have arguments about health care. But we're not going to just sign up to say the COVID area subsidies are there. COVID's not an issue. The same, the Affordable Care Act is the issue. It's the problem.
Senator Schumer just spoke. Here's what he said.
So now we're in a government shutdown. And you may be asking yourself, how the hell did we get here? Donald Trump and the Republican Party are hell-bent on taking health care away from 60 million people, closing community clinics, rural hospitals, nursing homes, all so they can keep giving tax breaks to their billionaire friends. It's a disgrace. So Democrats have three words for this. No way. It's literally life or death.
So that was his produced piece, my fault. He didn't just say it, but he posted it this morning. So I, with the violins in the back, it's much more motivating and moving. And I think so the thing that they keep saying to you guys, and it must be maddening because you're not a billionaire. They keep saying Donald Trump's giving breaks to his billionaire friends. All he did was bring rates from 39 to 37.5. And most of the tax breaks are for the middle and has nothing to do with this.
Yep. Every single rate in America was scheduled to go up next year. So make it clear, what Democrats were supporting was every single tax rate in the country going up. That's what they were fighting on the tax issues on this. And ironically, this is one of those Orwellian moments where Chuck Schumer is saying they're trying to be able to shut down rural hospitals. Literally, in the Democrat bill to reopen the government, they take away $50 billion from rural hospitals that Republicans allocated. It is our moonshot to be able to help rural hospitals get back on their feet, that investment starts in January of next year. That money starts rolling out in 3 months. The Democrats, in their bill that they want to have to reopen the government, takes away that money from rural hospitals. So literally, while Chuck Schumer is saying Republicans are trying to shut down rural hospitals, it is literally Chuck Schumer and the Democrats that are trying to be able to shut down rural hospitals.
So what about people, and the Democrats have said that you, and we saw it yesterday in the hearing, that you're cutting funding to police?
Yeah, we are certainly not cutting funding to police. Again, they're throwing spaghetti against the wall to be able to see what sticks. That worked in my mom's kitchen. That doesn't work in real life on it. They're just trying to be able to make things up at this point. That absolutely just does not, is just factually not true.
All right. That's who they're going with. Senator Lankford, best of luck. We have a test vote today. Is anybody working behind the scenes to see vulnerable Democrats?
Oh, yeah.
Gene Shaheen, we know. Ossoff's got to win in a red state. Gary Peters retiring. Durbin retiring. So, I mean, are there people that understand how damaging this is?
There are people that understand it. So what's happening now is if it's not resolved today, federal civilian workers will not get their paycheck on time coming up. Obviously, the Columbus Day holiday is coming as well, a federal holiday that's sitting there. And then if we don't get this resolved in the next couple of days, military pay will not go out. So this is solely a Democrat issue. And I can say that with great confidence because the last four times we got to September, we had the same exact moment to say we got to have a short-term extension and just made it a clean short-term. Keep the government open. All 4 years of the Biden administration in September, we had a clean extension every single time. It wasn't until Trump came in that the Democrats said they've got to be the resistance and to please their uber liberal base and to say we got to show that we're fighting. But there are Democrat senators that are really nervous about this, that know they're hurting people, but also feel like they've got to appease that liberal base and show they're fighting. But they should not be appeasing the protesters in Portland. They should be taking care of military families.
That would help. Senator James Lankford, thanks so much.
You bet. Good to talk to you again, Brian.
Same here. Always great. 1-866-408-7669. So we'll come back, finish up with some calls and your comments in just a moment. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I think the problem with the Bill Burrs and the Chappelles, or anybody in general, is if you're going to pitch like Aziz Ansari, if you're going to pitch woke bullshit here about people and people being oppressed and violence against women and all the you throw up every day, spare us when you go over there exactly. and take a check. That's the whole thing. What I don't like is the rail against oppressive, you know, Trump's an oppressive dictator.
Yeah.
We'll go take a check from an oppressive dictator.
So he's talking about Dave Chappelle. One of the things Dave Chappelle, because he took the money and went to Saudi Arabia, and one of the things he did is stand up. He says, right now in America, they say if you talk about Charlie Kirk, that you'll get canceled. Well, declared it, he said this at the Riyadh Comedy Festival in front of 6,000 people. He says, I don't know if that's true, but I'm going to find out. So that type of thing is what bothers him. Now, for Bill Burr, what did Bill Burr say over there? He went to the comedy festival, too. He's been very critical in the past of Saudi Arabia and people that take the oil money, imagine like Liv. But he, a lot of people say you shouldn't take the money. You should take the money. I know Shane Gillis says I'm not doing it. A lot of other people said I'm absolutely doing it. So here is here's what he said. Here's what Bill Burr has said in the past about Saudi Arabia.
Comedy show in like Saudi Arabia. Isn't that what they do? You know, that's how they raise money with their filthy f-ing oil money.
Really? That sounds a little negative towards Saudi Arabia. And now he takes that money and goes over there. I mean, I heard the money is ridiculously great. And a lot of people went. And Saudi Arabia has made gains. We watched the President of the United States say it's his good friend. I get it, the Crown Prince. But and that's fine. But if you go out and take a stand in Saudi Arabia, you're going to rip politicians for acknowledging Saudi Arabia or people like Liv, some of the golfers for taking the Saudi money. You can't go over there, take some money, and expect not to get criticized, especially if you go over there and you criticize, especially if you go over there and criticize the country. But I also think, in one way, I kind of like the fact that the Saudis see that we have comedians that know they could be make fun of the U.S. and they don't have any ramifications. I think that's a great example. I would love to say, I don't even know if Saudis have comedians, but can you imagine if Saudi Arabia mocked the fact, the comedy that they could have having women drive for the first time? And I think 4 years ago they allowed that and some of the things that are going on there. I just think it's the hypocrisy that people have a problem with. And that's what is being called out. Personally, the one thing I understand the 9/11 families, but I do think you have a generation of Saudis. According to the curriculum they're teaching, they got rid of that Wahhabism and they are raising a generation, I believe. And I'm willing to be corrected by Saudi, by Middle Eastern experts that might grow up understanding that America is not the problem, that the extremism, the extremism in Islam was the issue, and that you can practice your religion anywhere in our country and it's not a problem. It's a problem when you want to blow up other people who are not practicing a religion. That's the problem. So one of the things that Bill Burr said was they're not going to make progress in isolation. That's why he went over there. He said, I think the general consensus is, how dare you go to that place and make these oppressed people laugh? You blank, blank, blank. He said to Conan, I can't believe you went to that place. I can't find it on a map. And this bot said I was upset about it. So now I am. It's one of the things, one thing to wear clothes made by a sweatshop labor. It's quite another to go to the factory and make them laugh. I can't believe how much anger I had about this issue after it went viral. So O'Brien said, are you going to apologize? Said, no, not at all. It's one of the most amazing experiences I've had as a comedian. It was incredible. He added that this was the first time he had been the subject of a viral news story. In his view, the backlash supported his suspicion that the media twists things around. Nothing he knew. They were lying, which is why why he was really blanked up. So it does sound like he was about to apologize for it, but I'd like to hear about his experience. And I do agree that isolation is not going to help. And that's one of the best things you could do. One of the best exports America had in the Cold War was our movies. China too. But now they have to make sure they won't air any movies where China's the bad guy or anyone Asian's a bad guy. That's for another time. Don't forget, go to BrianKilmeade.com. Find out how to see me November 1st. Last time of the year, History, Liberty, and Laughs streamed on Fox Nation. Don't move.